Chris, great to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I want to start with a look at some of the data. People are wondering, how is New Mexico doing? We know the state and our area has not been recovering the way that much of the country has. What's the latest?
Well, we are not doing well compared to the rest of the country. Now, one thing people may think back and may remember, but our state started the recession after the national economy. So 2008, 2009 was the really tough time for the national economy. We started getting it in 2010. So we peaked in 2009, and then we've been below that peak ever since. So we're now pushing 8 years below our previous peak. And things are not doing well. Our per capita GDP is down. We have per capita personal income is down compared to where it was at its peak. We also are slipping behind the rest of the country. So per capita personal income is basically your entire income, including like Social Security payments and things like that. That's how it differs from GDP. GDP doesn't include Social Security payments and such. So the personal income per capita is down compared to the peak. Now, historically, New Mexico has been at something like 70% of the national average. Of course, we're a poor state, so but now we've slipped down to 65% of the national average. So we're falling behind even relative to where we were before the recession. We've not recovered from our peak. The other thing that's very troublesome is if you look at the data, our productivity in the state is falling. So even if you look at our workers are less productive today than they were a few years ago, less productive than the national average. And that's really impinging on our ability to produce and make income. And I think we can trace this back, to be honest with you, to the very poor performance of our K-12 educational system in New Mexico. We have not done well by our K-12 programs.
And you say that this is something that we often don't talk about when we talk about economic development, but you've written about this in your column that you believe that states, when they're looking at economic development, need to look at investment in education.
Absolutely. Education, just virtually every indicator that you look at, every study you look at, and plus common sense, tells you that that K-12 education is critical for economic development. And we have a number of problems in the state with K-12 education. One of them is that we are one of the few states in the country where the local school board has almost no taxing authority, that we fund our K-12 education primarily, especially the operating budget, not so much the capital outlays, but especially the operating budget is funded through gross receipts tax collected by the state and rebated to the locals. That rebate comes with lots of strings and lots of bureaucratic overhead. And I think that's one of the reasons why we have problems in our state. The other reason why we have problems in our state is that we underpay our teachers. Now, many teachers are very good. My wife was a teacher. My father was a school teacher, although not in New Mexico. And I have a lot of respect for school teachers. But the fact is, when you pay people well, you're able to attract high-quality people into the profession, and you're able to retain high-quality people in the profession. And we are not paying our teachers well enough to be able to do that. And frankly, again, the evidence shows that the most important factor in a quality education is good teachers, not textbooks, not computers, not buildings, but personnel, but teachers.
Yeah, of course, this is also an issue in higher education. We've seen in the last decade very little movement in terms of the aggregate overall for higher education salaries in the state. And it was very interesting, just in the past week, one of the five performance measures in the contract extension for the Western New Mexico University president, Dr. Joe Shepard, is to come up with a plan to look at compensation increasing for faculty and staff at WNMU to make it more market competitive.
Well, I think that that higher education is very important for economic development. And it paying people salaries to retain people. And of course, the higher education market is national. It's not a local market. You might argue that we pay teachers less because salaries are less in New Mexico in general. You can't make that argument for higher education where we're in a national market. You know, when I came here, although it's been 30 years, I've been here 30 years now, but when I came here, I interviewed in schools in Minnesota, I interviewed in Washington, D.C. at two different institutions, and I interviewed Nevada. And so I came to NMSU. By the way, they didn't pay the most, but they had the best job.
And sunshine.
sunshine, a good job, a nice place to work. I never complained about NMSU in that sense. The only thing NMSU does wrong is they don't pay their faculty enough. And it's bad enough now that we're having trouble with retention. People are leaving because particularly the very best performers leave because they have opportunities other places with better pay. You know, I kind of make the joke that you can pay me 10% less and I'm happy because NMSU is a nice place to work. Pay me 30% less and I probably need to find another
job.
Well,
and that's an interesting point because, as you know, that's really the analysis made in human resources, that's about the limit, 10%.
Yeah.
When you go beyond that, you have problems with retention. You also have problems, of course, with attracting new employees.
That's absolutely
right.
It's extremely difficult. And I want to emphasize that higher education is important. K-12 is the critical factor. So why is our productivity dropping in the state? And I think it's because, pretty sure it's because we're not able to attract high-end employers who have high productivity jobs because we don't have the workforce for it. Yeah. And that we can blame the state government and to a lesser extent the local school districts for not providing us with a good K-12 education and so and not as productive a workforce as we should have.
Yeah. Well, as you know, and I'm sure it's more frustrating for you because this is what you do. You're an economist. The talk when you hear about economic development, it's rare to hear about education. It's a passing topic. The more common thing, both here and really around the country, are these so-called closing funds.
Yeah.
In New Mexico, we call it LIDA. To attract new businesses or to try to get expansion. A lot of folks criticize this. What's your take on
it? Well, I'm very critical of these. I think they're next to a waste of money. There might be some very limited cases where some deal is just on the edge and you can throw in some LIDA money and that will close the deal. But generally speaking, it's counterproductive. And one of the reasons why it's counterproductive is because you're taking funding away from other activities that could also benefit economic development and it's more generally helpful.
Yeah. It's interesting. And, you know, one of the things that I also hear in terms of criticism of this, and we actually did a story on this several years ago. You were included in the story as someone who was interviewed. Is the other issue that comes up is just the basic fairness of it. So you have maybe even in New Mexico, our story covered in New Mexico, a look at the aerospace industry. And we did the story because there was a potential LIDA grant to a company. It never materialized, actually, but it was announced, this $500,000 grant for a company to come into Las Cruces. Our story went up north near Albuquerque to an aerospace company that was actually doing well in business and never got a dime of state money.
Absolutely.
And so very controversial.
Very controversial. I always say that these kind of closing costs are kind of the crack cocaine of economic development because they give you a quick fix. Politicians like them because they can thump their chest and say how many jobs they've created. but it is very limited. So, for example, the LEADA funds could be used to develop infrastructure that could be used by existing businesses, that could be used by consumers, and that could be also used to attract businesses into the community. Having fixing the potholes is as important for economic development when you figure the importance of transportation as anything else. And we're not fixing the potholes. Instead, we're giving handouts to private companies, picking winners and losers. It's just – it makes my blood boil.
Well, we're going to get past some of the more controversial things, so your blood's going to continue to boil here. One of the biggest criticisms of New Mexico's economic development strategy is the film subsidy. And people, when they hear me say that, may be like, what is he talking about? I've always heard it was a tax credit, and they think it's like a tax deduction, like writings. Yeah. And of course, it's a subsidy.
Yes.
You spend a dollar and you get 25 cents back from the state.
Yeah.
The state doesn't have interest in the movie. They've just given you the 25 cents back, and you're off and away.
Yeah, and so again... This is I don't know what I've already used the crack cocaine analogy, so you got to think of a worse one for this one, but this is just a sugar high kind of thing. You bring it, these films are very footloose, meaning that they can come and they can go, they can set up in Georgia, they can set up in New Mexico, they don't really care. And they come in and they represent a business project that lasts a few months. Breaking Bad went on for 5 years. And Breaking Bad, by the way, is just about, I think, the best television show ever made. But I don't think the taxpayers of New Mexico should have paid for the filming of it.
Yeah, we're not getting residuals from
Breaking Bad. No.
So other than any tourism. It's very hard to track. And of course, it again gets into this issue of fairness. It gets into this issue of what's the most effective way to use money. Not just does the money do something, what's the most effective
way? Right. So we paid to the producers of Breaking Bad, we paid them tax credits over the 5 years they were here, and then they shut down and moved off.
Yeah.
And if we on many of the LEADA type projects, you pay the subsidies for several years, and the business is still there.
Yeah.
In this case, as soon as the subsidy stopped, the business leaves.
Yeah.
It is a really very counterproductive way to do business. It's a good way to do business, a very bad way to run a government, I guess is what I really want to say. We should be in the business of having low taxes for everybody. We should be providing services to everybody, infrastructure, education, all those things that benefit everybody in the community, all the businesses in the community, not just the ones who are politically connected or savvy enough to get these this special treatment.
Okay, we move on now from one controversial issue in New Mexico, about $50 million a year, the film and TV subsidy, to, I suppose, the biggest single economic development effort in the state's history, a quarter of $1 billion for the spaceport. Critics say a decade ago, when it was just one of the only spaceports out there, maybe this was a possible endeavor. But right now, the critics say this looks very bleak. As you know, there are many supporters who say, excuse the pun, the sky is the limit, that this could be amazing. So
I think you did a good job of summarizing. And I was one of the supporters of the spaceport tax. At the time, I wrote a column in the Bulletin in which I said that it was high-risk activity, that it could very well set up a business or an industry that could sustain the area for a long time to come. But I also said that the execution was important, and it's been poorly executed. When the governor came into office, she cut the funding for it in her first budget. She restored much of that in her second budget, but that cut in funding in the first budget really took a lot of the momentum out of the project. They all but had to shut down because of that. And it was a crucial point in the development of the spaceport. Now, whether the spaceport could have been successful but for that, I'm not going to go that far, because there has been a lot of entry into the marketplace since then, and the spaceport has not been good at competing for business, has not been competitive with other spaceports.
And I think what concerns some people, Chris, and I want to get your take on this, is that we're not just talking about just something in the abstract here. These are very concrete issues, because it's not just, well, there are more spaceports now, but the additional spaceports are near the ocean. So yep. there are more rockets that can be used because they don't have the danger of being shot over land.
Yep.
And you also have the issue, of course, of those additional spaceports, from everyone from Jeff Bezos to Elon Musk, the top people in the industry, and some of the people who are called some of the top business people, period, in the country, they are locating them in major metropolitan areas where you have a highly skilled labor force, in some case an aerospace labor force that's already there.
Exactly. And we have a good aerospace program here on campus. But those kids who graduate from that aren't able to stay in the area, and the result is that although we're graduating students, there's not that critical mass of aerospace professionals here that allow us to attract people in here for the manufacturing part of the spaceport. So even Virgin Galactic is doing this, which has been very supportive of the spaceport overall. Mm-hmm. Virgin Galactic has been a good citizen of the spaceport, so to speak. But they have been doing their development work in California, because that's where the experts are. They even hire some of our students out of here, and they move to California. Mm. It has been a challenge to get this critical mass of workers that allow us to get that virtuous cycle, that good workforce attracts employers, employers attract good workers, and that virtuous cycle. We're kind of in the opposite of that.
Yeah. Well, something we may be talking about in a future economic forum on KRWG-TV. In January, it's expected that the New Mexico legislature will be once again looking at tax reform. And this always comes up in terms of economic development. I want to get your take on what you think the key issues are from an economist perspective. There's a lot of, as you know, a lot of division on this.
Yeah, well, the optimal tax, of course, the optimal tax, given the political constraints that we have, would be a value-added tax. Value-added means that you tax the increase in value from one step of production to the next step of production. And that has a lot of advantages. It minimizes the distortions of the economy. It increases efficiency. And of course, it's used all over the world. It's used in Australia and England. Most of the European countries have it. Many third world countries have it. United States is the only major economy that has not adopted this value added tax as an approach. It's an efficient way to collect taxes. And as it turns out, New Mexico's gross receipts tax is an imperfect value-added tax, as opposed to the sales tax in other states that tax only retail sales and not the other stages of production. So in that sense, not a bad tax. I support the gross receipts tax, but of course the devil's in the details. There's a lot of what they call pyramiding, where you have pay a gross receipts tax at one level, and you pay the same the gross receipts tax again at the next level, so at wholesale retail level, and that means you're taxing at least part of that sale twice, and that's not good. That's first of all, it's not fair. It's not fair to the person who's manufacturing, say, in the state, and then pays the gross receipts, and then the retailer pays the gross receipts again. That's not fair. And then secondly, it is an unfair competitive disadvantage for our manufacturers compared to other out-of-state manufacturers. So that needs to be fixed. The other thing that I would say also, and this is going to get me in trouble with a lot of people, but I think that we should tax food and we should tax drugs and we should tax medical care. Now, you might say, well, what about the people who can't afford that? Or the doctors will say, well, I can't pass that on to the insurance companies, to which I say New Mexico can pass a law that says that, yes, you can pass it on to the insurance companies. Just pass a law say that you the insurance companies must pay the gross receipts tax. And that is a perfectly legal thing to do. They are not licensed interstate. They are licensed in the state, and they can pay taxes as part of doing business in New Mexico. So I would actually expand the gross receipts tax to cover more products, but I would be very, very careful to minimize the pyramiding, the double taxation.
Yeah, so that's a big issue. You know, I think there's been a lot of talk about gross receipts tax reform being, a big focus in this, and largely getting rid of a lot of the exemptions. We have this
absolutely
Swiss cheese, kind of thing,
and the biggest hole in that Swiss cheese is food, is groceries. And you need to get rid of all those exceptions, in my opinion. And again, one low uniform rate for everybody, not these special favors and give-me's to special interests. The other thing I'd also say is that people say, well, the gross receipts tax isn't fair because it's a high tax. New Mexico does not have a particular high tax burden, not a particularly low one either, but not a particularly high one.
Except on property taxes, which is something we've got to say, because we have a lot of retirees who specifically moved to New Mexico.
Because of the property tax.
Because our property taxes are low. In fact, a recent study said we were number one in the country.
That doesn't surprise
me. In terms of property tax. So burden. So that's,
So with low property taxes, high gross receipts tax, kind of the middle of the road income tax. Mm-hmm. Add them all together, pretty average tax burden.
Yeah.
And most
studies say that. They put us not quite at 25, more like 35,
yeah,
34,
yeah, yeah.
But right in the middle.
Yeah, around the middle. If you say 35 to 15 is kind of the middle, then that's where we are. And it's reasonable. It's reasonable way that we don't need to be the highest tax state. We probably shouldn't be the highest tax state. But you've got to remember that it's like a piece of clay. When you put your thumb in one place, it bulges out somewhere else.
That's right.
And so if you reduce gross receipts tax, then you may have to increase sales tax, because we do have needed government services that have to be funded.
Absolutely. Dr. Chris Erickson of New Mexico State University, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.